You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and all your soul and all your mind. A number of you gathered with us last year, almost at this time, for breakfast on April 15th. You were dressed both for sun and shade, sol y sombra. You received a recitation of the Gettysburg Address and a poem from Longfellow. You sang two patriotic hymns in our residence. You sang very well, by the way. Following a little nourishment of eggs and muffins and donuts, juice and coffee, together you made your way to Kenmore Square to see the end of the race, the Boston Marathon, on that one New England family picnic day. Some, following the Kenmore Square moment, returned home. Others, a few, I believe, were tempted to study. A group then went, made their way, meandered, lollygagging down the Commonwealth Mall. Some, after a while, turned right there on Exeter and headed over toward Boylston Street. The street, a corner, very much on our mind this week as well. One, at least one couple, rather than turning left on Boylston, made their way back around the hotel and onto Huntington Avenue. And there and then, odd, for a time, indecipherable, loud claps, and the tide of pedestrian traffic turning and returning to Massachusetts Avenue, where another reported on what had happened. And then you, several of you, came here to Marsh Chapel. Two of you had gone that day to mend skinned knees and blisters and heat exhaustion in the tents, but many of you came here to join the priest and the rabbi and others to distribute blankets and water, the use of landlines, prayer and encouragement. The Boston University police came to take us to the medical center where one of our students lay injured, but by God's grace, she survived, only to ask the next day when conscious, and where is my friend, Lu Ling C? Not quite a year ago, we came straightway into the experience, the hard-boiled, hard-headed, realistic experience of evil and of randomness and of hurt, but also of grace and of perseverance. We may not then have been thinking of the scriptural reminders embedded in the traditional Calvinist five-part summary, the TULIP summary: total depravity, unconditional election, limited atonement, irresistible grace, perseverance of the saints. But we knew in our bones, in our hearing, something of that rendering, important rendering of reality, both in perseverance and in depravity, both in grace and in limitation. This Lent together, we have viewed the scripture and its reading, the Holy Gospel, as beautifully rendered today through the eyes and ears of John Calvin, the great Geneva reformer, 1509 to 1564. This in Lent we have done over several years, one way or another, either through Reformed tradition themes, atonement and decision and other, or voices from the Reformed tradition, Calvin and Marilyn Robinson and Jacques Ellul and other. That is, here in this Methodist pulpit, more Anglican than Calvinist, more Genesis 1 than Genesis 2, more creation than fall, you might say, we have found it very helpful to draw on the resources of our siblings whose teaching over 400 years has meant so much here in New England. And so we have together considered Calvin for Lent in Exit and Voice, in Letters of Recommendation, in Deep Thirst, and today in Love in Mind. Some years ago, 1982, Gabriel Vahanian, smoking his pipe in the Hall of Languages, no sterner Calvinist than he, answered a question by saying, "Well, you know, sometimes the will of man is more inscrutable than the will of God. The will of man is more inscrutable than the will of God." April 15th, 2013, to be clear, was the will of man. In grace and in depravity, in perseverance and in limitation. God does not die on the day we cease to believe in a personal deity, but we die on the day that our lives cease to be illumined by a radiance renewed daily of a wonder whose source lies beyond all reason. Don't you wish you had written that sentence? So do I, no? 'Twas Dag Hammarskjöld. God does not die on the day that we cease to believe in a personal deity, but we die on the day that our lives cease to be illumined by a radiance renewed daily of a wonder that lies beyond, whose source lies beyond all reason. No one has ever seen God. That's in the Bible. Love is God. That's in the Bible. You may be on an apophatic path today. I can travel with you at least part of the way. But if you are an apophatic, then let us be sure to be an emphatic apophatic, and to make our understanding of the divine in language useful. Mystery, wonder, spirit, presence. Having been taught and tutored in the school of John Calvin, whose Institutes of the Christian Religion are as marvelous today as they were so many hundred years ago, we might offer alongside in this Lenten journey an honoring and concomitant Wesleyan tulip formula. The Reformed tradition focuses on divine freedom. The Methodist tradition focuses on human freedom. And to move through life in faith, you need a little bit of both. Mr. Wesley might have put it, something temporal, something universal, something lasting, something imaginative, something powerful. The Gospel according to St. Matthew, in its shortened rendition of the lesson from St. Mark chapter 12, changes the teaching somewhat. Matthew eliminates the kindly reference to the interlocutor. Matthew erases, sad it is, the compliment Jesus pays his conversation partner, saying in Mark, "You are not far from the kingdom of heaven." In Mark, Jesus is asked to help, and he does. In Matthew, Jesus is put to the test, and he passes. Love of God and love of neighbor. It may be that 20-some years later, at the end of the first century, Matthew, under the shadow and the haunting darkness, the depravity, the randomness, the hurt of the end of the first century, has narrowed its teaching so that we get the marrow of the message. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, and with all your soul, and with all your mind. Matthew emphasizes the mind. The difficulties of this life and this world will not give way before sentiment only, emotion only, heart only, feeling only. There will need to be a combination as Matthew teaches. And mind, such a beautiful word, it appears almost exclusively in the New Testament, in the reading in the letters of Paul as read earlier from Romans chapter 12. The word nous, mind, intelligence, that roving reason, so important in the Greco-Roman world and, of course, in our own as well. For Matthew has chosen, though, a slightly different word, a related word, dianoia. It's got that prefix. It's got that jazz movement. It's got that flexibility. It's a beautiful word, mind. But here it means not so much thought as thinking, not so much mind as mindful, not so much understanding the noun as understanding the gerund, as in, if I am understanding you. It is a disposition. It is a perspective. It is a way of being. It is your calling card. Love in mind. How shall we live with love in mind? Do you? Do you have love in mind? In 2014, it surely will take something temporal, will it not? Something walking the green earth. President Robert A. Brown and former Mayor Thomas Menino this past Monday sponsored a day-long review of what had been done and done well following the bombings last year. What a marvelous 8 hours of learning and teaching. Among many other things, they pointed out that what was done so well, those who made it to an ambulance without exception survived, was done because of trust, whether in the first responders or in the networks of social and health and medical care or at the very top leadership, the governor and the mayor and all. These were people who knew each other by name and could call and speak, who weren't distributing on a first occasion basis their name, rank, and serial number. There was a trust there. This is what we hear from David. David, whose Bildungsroman begins today, this yet another of those hidden and powerful shepherds in Scripture. But David, who's always, you know, in conjunction. How do you think of David? Don't you think of him as David and? David and Jonathan? David and Saul? David and Goliath, David and Bathsheba and Nathan and Uriah, David and Solomon. David is always David in a context, in a social location. Yo soy yo y mis circunstancias, said Ortega. I am myself and my circumstance. To love in mind will require something temporal, will require something universal as well. There's something about truth. There's a self-correcting spirit of truth loose in the universe. That's the gospel. But our role is to connect ourselves with it wherever we can. And when we don't, we know the failure. Philip Seymour Hoffman, a good Rochester lad, died tragically this year. You'll remember his dark films, his capacity to move at the edge, as in his partnership with Meryl Streep in Doubt, and that sermonic moment when the woman comes to Father O'Rourke in the story and says, you know, yesterday my friend and I were talking about a man we hardly know. We were gossiping, and at night I had a dream of God's hand extending to me. Was that a warning, Father, that I should ask for forgiveness? And the pastor replies, I'll skip the harsher terms, simply saying, you have played fast and loose with someone's reputation. Of course that demands absolution, which he gives. She goes to leave, and he says, by the way, do something for me. When you go home, take a pillow up to the roof and cut it open. So she goes home, enters the kitchen, finds a knife, goes into the bedroom, takes a pillow, goes up the back staircase to the roof on a windy day and cuts open the pillow, and 10,000 feathers fly. She returns and he says, "What happened?" "Feathers," she answered. And he said, "Well, now just take the pillowcase and go back and collect every one of those." But Father, I can't. There's no way. The wind has taken them." "Ah," he says, "so now you understand gossip. When we distribute misinformation, play fast and loose with someone else's reputation, we have cut against the grain of the universe, and you won't fully understand it until it's happened to you. Something universal, something lasting and lastingly good, the life of Jesus stands. Jesus teaching not a few but many. Jesus loving not in depravity but in eternity. Jesus not in limitation but sitting and teaching to all within the range of his voice. Jesus, who found that grace was eminently resistible, according to the gospel account, and Jesus, whose perseverance lasted to the point of the cross, which is our weekly and monthly seasonal journey here in Lent. There's going to be something lasting in the love in mind. You shall love the Lord your God with all your mind. Whether or not you trust all of the statistics in Christian Smith's book on the generation of those in their 20s, lost in transition, the dark side of emerging adulthood, the description, statistical description of amoral sexuality and rampant drunkenness and steady drug use and lack of empathy for others, whether or not you share the view of Charles Blow and his look at the millennials, those who are not inclined to support institutions, political or religious or other, the self-E generation, as he calls that group. You know, you wonder, even if much of this has some truth, what does this cohort remind you of? Of whom do they remind you? Their parents? Perhaps so. There is going to need to be a lasting component, a multi-generational lasting component to the teaching and practice of love in mind, and that's where you come in, Marsh Chapel. There will need to be an imaginative dimension to such a love as well. Think of those whose voices ring still to this day. William Sloan Coffin, Augustine of Hippo, Erazim Kohak, Marilyn Robinson, Julian of Norwich, those whose fertile imaginations have freed us up and moved us forward, given us the grace to see in a new way. This week, the obituary of Zbigniew Romaszewski of Solidarity Leadership 30 years ago was printed. He went up on another rooftop and broadcast as he could. He was a physicist, a person of the mind, but he gave himself to the solidarity movement so long ago. And even though his broadcast could only be heard 2 or 3 minutes a day, up to the rooftop he went. Love in mind will require the expansion of the imagination. And love in mind will require something powerful. Marshall Poe, this winter, in his article in the Atlantic Monthly about higher education, gives us such a word. It's an article about religion and higher education. He concludes his essay by writing, "American higher education is the envy of the whole world, and why wouldn't it be? Here you may be taught the history of the French Revolution, to understand the carbon cycle, how to solve for X. But American higher education has one glaring deficiency. It cannot teach you how to live. When you are sad, confused, and lonely, when a breakup becomes a breakdown, when you end up living on your friend's couch, when your parents divorced 15 years continue to fight, when you don't make the team, when you do get pregnant, when you are assaulted or worse, when your mind goes numb, when you wonder what the meaning of it all is, and when you are terrified by the question, whatever am I going to do next? For that, you'll need something like the gospel, something powerful, something like love in mind. Marsh Chapel, you have everything to offer today. You can speak an intervening, saving word through your building, through your history, through your location, through your liturgy, through your music, through your preaching, through your care. You can speak a powerful, intervening word. To my young friends, when you write your history of John Wesley and his theology, please summarize, if you will, in tulip fashion, temporal and universal, lasting and imaginative, powerful all. Or, if you'd rather have the music than the words, you might sing along with Charles, that beautiful Kingswood hymn, written in 1762 for the opening of an elementary school. Unite the pair so long disjoined, knowledge and vital piety, learning and holiness combine, and truth and love let all men see. May I ask you a question? For better, for worse, for richer, for poorer, in sickness and in health, Do you have love in mind? You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind.